I wish to sincerely welcome everyone to Sri Radha Gopinath's Sunday festival. Today we are blessed by many illuminated, enlightened associates of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We have His Holiness Prahladananda Swami Maharaj, His Grace Shamsundar Prabhu, His Holiness Niranjan Swami Maharaj. You have all met them many times. They have been introduced many times. We also have somewhere Yadubar Prabhu, Vishaka Mataji, and two very special guests are also about to come. Let us very sincerely and enthusiastically give them heartfelt welcome to Sri Radha Gopinath. We'd like to ask each of the devotees to speak for some time, beginning with His Holiness Prahladananda Maharaj.
Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Paristaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya De Siddharane. So I'll give 10 minutes of slokas. It's nice to be back here in Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir. The spiritual platform of consciousness in the Bhagavad Gita is said is based upon service to Krishna. Brahmarpanam, Brahmahayavir, Brahmagno, Brahmahutam, Brahmaiva, Tena, Gantavyam, Brahma, Karma, Samadhina. There is nothing but the spiritual world. But for those who are in the consciousness of trying to compete with Krishna, we think that there's something called the material world. We think that there's something going on outside of Krishna. But the process of devotional service given to us by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, coming down in disciple succession from Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is the process of service, particularly for this age. It is said by Srila Rupa Goswami that there are different types of devotees, those who are aspiring to enter into the spiritual platform. There's the Kanista Adhikari, who is more or less on the material platform. More on the material platform means that one is always thinking about how much distress we're in. And my dear Lord, please help me get over my distress. So our distress is principally caused by the fact that we think we're in distress. And those who are a little bit more elevated, they think, now I'm not in distress so much, please Krishna, help me enjoy. But there is no enjoyment, therefore anyone who tries to enjoy in the material world will find themselves again in distress. And that may go on for a long time. Between trying to get out of distress, trying to get into enjoyment, and then back to distress again. And one who tries to figure out what's wrong with this process of going from distress to enjoying, so-called enjoying, back to distress, they become a little inquisitive. What's going on? I'm trying so hard to get out of distress and enjoy, but nothing seems to be working right. Maybe God doesn't like me. Or maybe there is no... So many questions. Jignasu. That is the beginning of intelligence. Why can't I be happy here in the material world? And when the answers are there, one will realize or understand that I'm not part of the material world. I am a spiritual soul, and therefore it is impossible to be happy in the material world. The only thing I could factually enjoy is distress. That is the beginning of, or that is the topmost Kanista Adhikari. Madhyama Adhikari begins from that platform, Ishvara Ted Tad Adineshu, Bali Sheshu Dvitsasucha, Prema Maitri Kripo Peka Yat Karoti Samadhimaha. The Madhyama Adhikari platform means when we see Krishna, then we see him as the source of prema, as the object of prema, of love. Not that we have something material to get from Krishna, we want to give Krishna our love. And for the devotees, there is the objects of friendship and appreciation for their service to Krishna, and there is the attitude of cooperation, to try to cooperate to please Krishna. And for the innocent, there is the compassion coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through his line of disciples' succession to try to elevate them to the platform or reawaken them to the platform of devotional service to Krishna. And for those who have or are completely determined to avoid Krishna or antagonistic towards Krishna and his devotees, upeksha. We should not try to bother with them. And that doesn't mean simply people we meet on the street, trying to give them books. It also means associating with such persons through reading their literature or through watching television or the internet or going to their movies or whatever else they're having to offer in the glorification themselves as the controllers and enjoyers of this material world, and advertising that we also can become enjoyers and controllers just like they are. Upeksha, we have to learn to disregard their wrong conception, their wrong mood, their wrong object of devotion. And instead, we have to associate with the devotees, we have to elevate the innocent, and we have to give our love somehow or another to Krishna and his devotees. This is the process that Srila Prabhupada has given us. And we can see that so many devotees here have come in order to progress more and more in this process of devotional service. So every year, due to the devotion of the devotees here, the devotion is attracting so many other persons to take up the process of devotional service. The mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Yare Deka Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh Amara Agara Guru Hana Tare Desh. Whoever you meet, you just tell them about Krishna. As we've heard from Srila Prabhupada, preaching is not very difficult. Shyamasundara Prabhu's daughter, when she was 2 years old or 3 years old, she used to go up to people and ask people, do you know who Krishna is? And when they said no, she'd say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Srila Prabhupada said that this is perfect preaching. And one time one man said, why are you worshiping Krishna? And little Saraswati took her little hand and slapped him across the face. And Prabhupada said that this is nishta. This is fixed in devotional service. Cannot be budged. Devotional service is not very difficult. It is actually quite simple. The material world is quite difficult and very complicated. So Maya, Prabhupada once said that Maya means it makes things very complicated. We should try to understand the simplicity of devotional service, that if we love Krishna and we serve Krishna through his devotees, then Krishna will be pleased, and our lives will become successful and meaningful. Otherwise, we'll just waste our time. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanande.
Pralhadananda Swami Maharaj ki jai.
Ranath Maharaj ki jai. Vrinda Maharaj ki jai. Shamasundar Prabhu ki jai.
His Holiness Niranjan Swami Maharaj will now speak.
Birth of Himalayas is about to take place. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Savakaya Chakshu Unminitam Yenatasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Ukam Koroti Vachalam Bangam Mangayate Ganyam Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Guru Vinatarama. Hare Krishna. I have been asked to speak. Therefore, as we oftentimes recite this verse, Mukam Koroti Vachalam Bangam Mangayate Garim, Tat Kripa Tamaham Mande Shigunandina Taranam. By the mercy of the spiritual master, even a dumb man can speak eloquent words. Should I welcome our distinguished guest, or you will welcome him? Hare Krishna Swavas Prabhu. You want to introduce Swavas Prabhu? Okay, before he speaks. You're going to speak.
No.
But if I move down, I have to move the microphone too. This room. This room. I think this room. Yes. So, His Holiness Prahladananda Maharaj was speaking about mission of Lord Chaitanya. I believe that was mentioned. This morning I was reading the first verse of Sikshastakam, which very nicely describes the mission of Lord Chaitanya. We all know this verse. Most devotees recite it every morning. And it is explained that in this verse, Lord Chaitanya describes the seven benefits and effects which are the result of chanting the holy name of the Lord. Cheto Dapana Majana. Cheta means the heart, and Dapana means the mirror. And the Cheto Dapana Majana. Majana means to clean. So one effect is that there is the cleaning of the mirror of the heart. Just like it is described that on a mirror, sometimes particles of dust will accumulate on a mirror. And the result of the appearance of these dust particles, it's very difficult to see oneself in the mirror. So these particles of dust are compared to be like different anartas within the heart that need to be cleaned. Just like the cleansing of the mirror, you wipe away the particles of dust and gradually you can see the reflection. The same way, one has to clean the particles of dust within the heart. Lord Chaitanya says that this Sankirtan movement will cleanse these particles of dust. As we said, these particles are compared to be like anartas, unwanted things within the heart. To discuss the subject matter of anartas is a very broad subject matter, and it is beyond the scope of today's presentation to describe all the different types of anartas that exist within the heart. They're quite plentiful. But the anarthas categorically are described as, first is described as weakness of the heart, Hridaya Dalbaryam. And this weakness of heart is broken down into different categories. One is called kutinati, or duplicitousness and fault finding. Then there's patishta, a desire for getting respect. Also, it's described an awakening or the attachment to those things would have no relationship with Krishna. This is also another type of weakness of heart. Maharaj was also describing that in his talk when he was explaining that our conditioned state in material life is we are so much attached to this world without being conscious or aware of the existence of a superior realm, superior world. So these are different types of anarthas that are there within the heart. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta gives a elaboration upon this in the Tiskori of the Gundicha Majanam. Just like there's the Cheto Dharpana Majanam, there's also the Gundicha Majanam, which is the cleansing of the Gundicha temple. And when Lord Chaitanya went into the Gundicha temple and he began cleaning all the dirt within the temple, and all of his associates were accompanying him, they were also cleaning. And Lord Chaitanya was getting out such large quantities of dirt, stacking it up outside. And just Lord Chaitanya, by his own efforts alone, he stocked up a pile of dirt which even surpassed the collective effort of all the other devotees who were cleaning the temple. And then after cleaning the temple once, then he told everybody, now go in and clean again. But this time, clean the finer particles of dust. First is the gross, then there's the finer particles. And these finer particles of this dust, would you compare it to like these different types of anarthas that need to be cleansed from the mirror of the heart? Jiva Hingsa, envy of living beings. This is another type of anartha. Nishadachara, which means the neglect of the scriptures, minimizing the scriptures, and to neglect the injunctions of the scriptures, thinking them to be irrelevant or unimportant. Puja, the desire for worship. Pratishta, the desire to be respected. All these things are there, but they're subtle. If we're to look within our own hearts carefully and honestly, because sometimes it takes an honest attempt to look into our own hearts. Usually the tendency is we try to look into everybody else's except our own, out of fear that what we may find may require some heavy cleansing, purification, which also can be sometimes a little painful, especially depending upon how deeply rooted these attachments are there within the heart. When something is deeply rooted, it's a little painful to remove it. It's like if you get a thorn and it's deep. Just before coming here, I got a splinter at my foot in Hartford. It was very deep. Tried to get it out. I couldn't get it. So deep. And going in to get it was very painful. I finally just said, someone said, just, it's okay, just leave it there. It'll find its way out. And I said, that sounds like a good idea. So I just left it. It'd be nice if our anarthas could come out as easily as that. Just leave it and eventually it will find its way out. But Lord Chaitanya says that if we chant the holy name of the Lord, then that's one of the byproducts that will come, is that these anarthas will gradually be cleaned away and we won't have to take them away. Krishna will take them away. Shrinvatasmakata Krishna Punya Shava Nakirtana Kridantisto Hyabhadani Vidinatu Sahitsata. That Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the super soul within the heart of the living being. He cleanses desires for material enjoyment within the heart of that person who develops the urge to hear his messages, which are themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. Krishna, he cleans. The cleansing process is He removes. Because Krishna and His name, they are non-different. Naman Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya, Rasa Vigraha, Puna Shuddho, Nityamukto, Vinatva Nama Namino. This verse, Srila Prabhupada oftentimes would quote, explains how the holy name is non-different from Krishna. So, Krishna, in the form of His holy name, He cleanses. Chaito Dharpana Majana. Cleanses the heart. Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapna. Bhava means material existence, and Mahadavagni means the blazing fire. Nirvapanam extinguishes the blazing fire of material existence. This is another effect of chanting of the holy name of the Lord. This material world is compared to be like a blazing forest fire. And as we know, to put out a blazing forest fire, it requires huge quantities of rain. So the holy name of the Lord is just like this huge quantities of rain which comes down to put out the blazing fire of material existence. This is another byproduct of chanting. Shreya Kairaiva Chandrika Vitaranam. Shreya means good fortune. And Kairaiva is a white lotus. Shreya Kairaiva Chandrika means moonlight, Vitaranam, spreading. The example is given that just like the white lotus blossoms when it is touched by the moonlight. Right? When that moonlight of the holy name of the Lord, actually we come in contact with the moonlight of the holy name of the Lord. And what does it do? It blossoms all auspiciousness within the heart of the sincere chanter. Everything auspicious manifests within his heart. Right? Simply by becoming in contact with the moonlight, Chandrika, which is compared to be like the holy name. This is an actual occurrence that takes place when the moonlight touches the white lotus. Right? Some flowers will open up from the effects of the sun, and some flowers open up by the effects of the moon. And the white lotus opens when the moonlight touches it. So in the same way, our hearts open to the word of Shreya, auspiciousness. Another word for good fortune is auspiciousness, is actually it's described. One's life becomes completely auspicious. Everything that is auspicious. Rupa Goswami describes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that something is accepted to be auspicious if it produces four effects. One is that it can benefit everyone. It can attract everyone. It produces good qualities. And it bestows a superior form of happiness. So it's described, something is considered to be auspicious when these four effects manifest. Right? The holy name of the Lord, because it's non-different than Krishna, can attract everyone. Because Krishna is all attractive. And everyone can benefit. Prabhupada used to give the example, just like if a child touches fire. Right? The fire does not discriminate. A child touches fire, the fire will burn. Doesn't make any difference. Old person, young person. The fire will not discriminate. In the same way, if one comes in contact with Krishna in the form of His holy name, it will act. It will act. Somehow it will act, simply by coming in contact. So in the same way, in the same way that this anyone who comes in contact with the holy name of the Lord, then immediately auspiciousness can be produced. And as we said, auspiciousness means that everyone can be attracted and everyone can be benefited. And it also means it bestows good qualities. Prabhupada would oftentimes say, he said, if Krishna is immoral, how is it that by chanting Krishna's name, one becomes completely purified. Right? Sometimes people say that Krishna is an immoral person because he is meeting in the dead of night with others' wives. Right? They could not understand. For them, bhakti is a mystery. The Prabhupada said that by chanting his names, immediately one develops all good qualities. And Prabhupada used to quote that verse, Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavacha kinchana savayganaistatra samasate sura. Harava bhaktasi kato mahagana manano manano manorate nasati davato bihi. that all the good qualities of the demigods, they automatically become manifest in the heart of a person who is engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the other hand, the non-devotee, he will not have any good qualities. So all the good qualities will automatically become manifest for one who comes in contact with the holy name of the Lord and bestows its superior happiness. Well, anandam ambudi vardhanam. Cheto dharpana majanam bhava maha devaginava shreya karai vachandrika itarana vidyavadu jivanam. We forgot. Vidyavadu jivanam. Vidya means all education, and vadu means wife. Jivanam means life. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that in the heart of the devotee who chants the holy name of the Lord, then Bhakti Devi, who is the wife of Krishna, she appears within the heart along with her two sons, knowledge and detachment. So Bhakti Devi appears within the heart, who is the wife of the Lord, and two sons, knowledge. What is that verse? In the Bhagavatam, that Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janaya Yasu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayad Ahitukam. By rendering devotional service to the Supreme Lord, one automatically acquires knowledge and detachment from this world. So, Vidyavaru Jivanam, the life of transcendental knowledge. So this also manifests simply by chanting, that knowledge and detachment will appear within one's heart. Anandam Amburi Vardhanam. Ananda, we all know what this means. Ananda means ever-increasing bliss, and Amburi means ocean, and Vardhanam means increases. Increases the ocean. Just as we said, anything which is auspicious bestows a superior form of happiness. So in the same way, chanting the holy name of the Lord, it increases the ocean of transcendental bliss. All right. That ocean is increased more and more. The example is given, it's just as a person who's engaged in devotional service, then all immediately, all transcendental life arises simply by his chanting of the holy name of the Lord. And it's described that just in the same way, just as a big tree will manifest from a small seed, in the same way a whole ocean of bliss will manifest by coming in contact with devotional service. It's there. It's waiting to reveal itself, that ocean of bliss within our hearts. But until we can remove the covering, it will not fully manifest. It will take time. First it will come in the form of a glimpse, a slight glimpse. And then, it's called abhasa rupa. Abhasa rupa means it's just a slight, small glimpse will manifest. But then gradually it becomes more and more steady, appears within the heart. And gradually this whole ocean of bliss will manifest by chanting the holy name of Allah. So vidyavadu jivanam anandam buddhi vardhanam pratipatam padam purnama to purnamrita asvadanam. Pratipadam means that every step, purna amrita, purna is full of amrita, nectar, asvadanam, one can taste. There is some taste. Just like Rupa Goswami describes in his Upadashamrita, he says that the holy name, form, pastimes, and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are all naturally sweet, just like sugar cane. But for one who has been afflicted by the jaundice of avidya, he cannot taste anything sweet. But it is very wonderful that simply by carefully chanting these sweet names every day, then what happens? A gradual relish awakens within the tongue, and the disease, that avidya, that jaundice, becomes destroyed at the root. By carefully chanting. Carefully chanting every day means that very attentively we chant the holy name, very carefully meditating on the true glory of the holy name. This is not an ordinary name. This is Nama Chintamani Krishna. This is non-different. This transcendental touchstone bestows all spiritual benedictions. That is the nature of the holy name of the Lord. So at every step, from the very beginning all the way to the end, at every step one can begin to taste purna amrita, Asvadanam, taste nectar. Sarva Atma Snapanam. Sarva Atma Snapanam. Sarva means everyone, and Atma Snapanam means taking the Atma, the Snapanam, the taking a bath of the Atma, of the soul. It's like a cooling, refreshing bath, like in the heat of the summer when one wants to get relieved from the heat of the summer, he takes a very nice cool bath. So in the same way, everyone is experiencing the blazing heat of materialistic life, burning up in the fire of material existence, right? Being burnt up by his lust. Kama esha kota esha rajaguna samudvava, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita. It is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the mode of passion and later transformed into wrath. It's the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. But by chanting the holy name of the Lord, what happens? Atma. Everyone. Sarva Atma Snapanam. Everyone can take this experience, the cooling effects of coming in contact with the holy name of the Lord. Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtan. Param means transcendental. Vijayate. Let there be all glories for the Shri Krishna Sankirtan. Congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Such is the great benediction which Lord Chaitanya has come to give us. Lord, that is his mission. He's come to give us the transcendental holy name of the Lord, the transcendental association. Kali Kali Namarupa Krishna Avatar Nama Hoite Hoisava Jagat Nistara. Right? In the age of Kali, how does the Lord appear? Kali Kali Nama Rupa, in the form of his holy name, Krishna Avatar. Nama Hoitoi Hoisava Jagat Nistara. Anyone who associates with the holy name of Krishna, it's as good as associating with Krishna directly. Directly with Krishna. Certainly he becomes delivered. Such is our Shreya. Such is our good fortune in this age of Kali. This age of Kali is so auspicious that it is glorified. In this age of Kali, it is glorified because in this age, the Lord is so kindly, so mercifully given the means by which one can achieve all perfection by the most simple and sublime process, simply by chanting these sweet names of Krishna every day. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Our life can become perfect. That is the benediction in this age of Kali. Kaler dosha nidhe rajan hastihiko mahadgana kirtanareva krishnasya mukta sangam param vrajat. The age of Kali is compared to be like an ocean, dosha nidhe, an ocean of all bad qualities. But there is one good quality. Simply by kirtan, simply by chanting the holy names of the Lord, one can achieve all perfection of life. So we are very fortunate to have the opportunity to be in the association of such wonderful Vaishnavas who are always increasing our attraction for this chanting of the holy name of the Lord. The more our attraction for chanting the holy name of the Lord increases, then simultaneously the more this blazing fire of material existence will be removed from our lives. And we'll begin to experience this bliss that is found in the sankirtan of the Lord's holy names. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Shyam Sundar Prabhu.
Yesterday, I took a little taxi ride into Bombay, down into the downtown Fort District of Bombay. And as I began to leave Chaupati and move down Marine Drive, gradually, increasingly, I became immersed in the wonderful memories that I associate with Bombay. It seemed like almost nothing has changed. And here it was, 34 years later, going down the same street, seeing the same houses, That's a third of a century. A very long time. And I began to see this place, oh, that's where Prabhupada had an engagement. This place over here, oh, that's where I used to buy this for Prabhupada. Down around Church Gate, here's the central post office. I can remember standing in there sometimes all day, from morning until night, because Srila Prabhupada had given me a task that he wanted to make one phone call and deliver one message. And in those days, there was not good communications. So you had to go to the central post office and stand in a long queue and book what they called a trunk call. And if you paid double, they would give you what was called a lightning trunk call, which meant 6 hours instead of 12 hours. And quite often, especially during monsoon, the lines would be down. But Prabhupada had given the task. I want to call so-and-so and tell them such-and-such. So I would wait, get in the queue, put in my chit, and wait sometimes 6, 8, 10 hours. But there was no way I was going to go back to Srila Prabhupada with saying, oh, Srila Prabhupada, I have failed. And he used to give his letters to me to mail. One of our life members had given a 1952 Chevrolet, big American car. Old, but in good running condition. Big V8 engine, loud horn. I had the loudest horn in town, so everybody got out of my way. Every day I used to drive into Bombay to do all of Prabhupada's errands. Or if Prabhupada wasn't here, then to do all of the devotees' errands, the temple's errands, take people around, devotees, drop them off, go here, go there. So I became quite familiar with Bombay. And yesterday as I was driving, these places just came back like an ocean of wonderful, blissful memory. I guess you forget the bad parts and the pain over time, and you only remember the good, right? And then after the central post office, here's Krasmaidan, where Srila Prabhupada grasped India, sleeping India, by its ears and shook it awake in 2 short weeks, this practically dead corpse of religiosity in India. And then on down towards VT station, I got down from the taxi and walked through those arcaded streets in the fort, and nothing has changed. It was just like it was 34 years ago. The Victorian buildings and the ornate scroll work, and the shops were still in the same place. Here's the Kadi Bhavan, where I used to buy cloth for Srila Prabhupada, and it's still the same. You have to go to each desk, whatever item you buy, and they write out your receipt in triplicate using carbon papers and give discounts. And first they would give a 20% discount, and then below that a 5% discount. And I asked her, why don't you just give 25% discount? Oh, but this is the way it is done. It was just like the old days. So then you go to the next desk and the next desk, and you collect all of your receipts, and then you go to one window where you pay and you hand in your chits, and boom, the rubber stamps come out, boom, boom, boom. And then you go over to the next place and get your packages one by one, and boom, boom, boom with the rubber stamps. It was wonderful. It was going back 34 years. And here's the little shop where I bought the camera for Srila Prabhupada that we took to Moscow. That wonderful little brownie box camera, the only camera I could find in Bombay then. It just had a little hole in it, and you put a button on top. There was no other adjustment. And the man only had one roll of film. 12 shots, black and white. No other camera, no other film in Bombay 34 years ago. So with that one little camera, 12 pictures came out perfectly in Moscow. And they become classics of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada in Moscow. From that little shop, and it's still there. And across the street and down a little ways, the little shop, the guy is still there who used to change our money on the black market. He's still there. And then driving back after the day, he was at the horse races where I thought he probably would be. On the way back, driving, then you pass the Parsi Dairy Farm down here and go up over the flyover with Lord's Cricket Ground back onto Marine Drive. And I started thinking, going up over that, the sun was shining in the west down onto the bay out here. It was just beautiful. The wind was nice and calm. And as it made that turn on the flyover to head back toward Chapati, I was flooded with remembering what it was like. Here I was at the end of the day coming back to see the devotees again. The devotees who might be at Akash Ganga or some other place, wherever we were living in those days, be back into the wonderful association of the devotees after this day of running around in the material world of downtown Bombay. And just to see their delightful faces and jokes, all the jokes, all of us would come back at the end of the day and joke about everything that we had seen and everything we had done, the characters we met that day. And if Srila Prabhupada was in town, then the anticipation began to grow. As I got closer to wherever he was, that I'm going to see my spiritual master and give him my report. I tried everything I could to make sure that the report would not be a bad one. Even though I knew he would accept failure, I didn't like to come before Prabhupada with failure. Prabhupada, I could not obtain something, or I could not get through to someone on the phone or whatever. Because that would, although Prabhupada was absolutely forgiving and all that, there's no question of that. But by reporting some victory, then you got to see Prabhupada's face light up. Aha! Another victory. This was their mood. We had only our spiritual master. We had no other object in our lives. Before coming to India in the West, Srila Prabhupada was there with us, but he was not as active in the affairs spreading. He left it to us as Westerners. We knew how to do this stuff in America, in other places, Europe. So he let us do it. He gave us the direction and said, now you go out and do it. And he would meet maybe two or three times a week with strangers or people who would come in to talk to him. But mostly he sat in his room and thought up how to spread Krishna consciousness. And spoke in the temple with the devotees. But in India, it was just the opposite. We didn't know how to do anything here. We didn't know how to use the toilets even. We didn't know how to buy gas. We didn't know how to change money. We didn't know how to do anything. It was all new, completely new. I mean, it was wonderful, but new. We didn't know how to do anything. Prabhupada took upon every task. He managed every aspect of our lives. He taught us how to do the simplest things. How to talk to people. How to move among the Indian people, how you expect certain things that are customary of sadhus. Prabhupada gradually taught us every day more and more about India. We were totally dependent upon him. Totally. We didn't know how to do anything. His presence here in India became exceedingly obvious to us. Our love for him, it was greatly enhanced day by day seeing him in India against this fabulous backdrop of color and life and exotic beauty that is India. Even yet, surrounded by all of this, his beauty only became enhanced. He seemed to be more regal yet, and more beautiful yet. Here he could take his clothes off, so we could see the golden skin of his upper body and his arms. In America, he had to wear lots of clothes, bundle. We only saw his face. Here we got to see Prabhupada in his relaxed mode, on his bolsters, leaning back, talking to... Because every day he was talking with people, more and more people were coming to him constantly. He loved it. From morning to... I mean, we would all go to sleep around midnight and Prabhupada would still be in his room with four or five people from Bombay talking. And he would encourage them to help if he saw some will to help and assist us in some way by one of the local people. He would encourage that. Many people came to challenge him. And he would argue with them and drive home his points. And the temperature... We got very hot. For us, it was very hot, 100 degrees or more. That's 45 degrees centigrade. For us, we were just wilting in this heat, and Prabhupada just carried on as if there was no, as if he was cool. In fact, when you came closer to Prabhupada, every time you came in his room and came closer to him, the whole atmosphere cooled down around him. It was just cool. Everything was cool around Prabhupada. So a million things can be said, but I remember distinctly one thing Prabhupada told me, and perhaps several other devotees who were in the room during this time. Someone had met a rascal that day in Bombay. They had been doing some business or something in Bombay, and they met someone that was not very nice. So they were criticizing this person in front of Prabhupada. Prabhupada listened and listened. And he said, yes, he said, well, there are different ways to look at people. And he said, then he explained the six attitudes that people take toward each other, the six judgments. He said, there is the lowest type of person. This type of person will see only the bad in everyone. Only the bad. He will only see bad in everyone. The next lowest type of person will see the good and the bad, but he will choose the bad. He will choose to bring out the bad in someone. And the next type of person... He'll see a very little bit of bad in someone and bring it out, make it very big. He said, but the devotee just gradually ascends that scale. There are people also who will see both the good and the bad in people and will choose to see the good. And then there will be those who see only the good. Only the good. They will see people, a person, an individual, and see only good in him or her. But he said the highest type of person is the one who sees a little bit of good in someone and makes it very big. These are the instructions that he was giving us, how to act. So we had Srila Prabhupada in all of his glory right here in Bombay. This was Prabhupada. And don't forget, Prabhupada had started out in Calcutta. He thought his mission in India would start in Calcutta. That would be the center. He came in August. We came to Bombay in October. After 3 months struggling in Calcutta, Prabhupada could see, no, this will not be good. We cannot take the root of Hare Krishna movement, cannot start in Calcutta side. And then when he came to Bombay, he saw immediately, now this is the best place for Krishna consciousness to take root in India. It's the gateway to India. Everything about it is auspicious and opulent. Prabhupada loved it here. He was like the king of kings. His regal manner was so obvious to everyone who saw him that no matter how many sadhus and sages are walking the streets in India and Bombay, nobody looked like Prabhupada. He stood out so differently than any of these people, all of these so-called sadhus and sages. So Prabhupada was unique. Prabhupada was so unique. From the beginning, he was unique. And in our eyes, he only got more and more and more and more beautiful by being here in Bombay. All glories to our beloved spiritual master.
Thank you very much, Shamsundar Prabhu. Today, two very special guests have come for the first time. Swabhas Prabhu and his good wife, Tadit Prabhu. They are very, very faithful, dedicated disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. They are both very much known throughout the whole world for their very sincere, unconditional surrender to Srila Prabhupada's will. They joined in the early 70s. Swabhas Prabhu was a very leading book distributor for many, many years. And he was temple president in Denver. And so many things. At this time, he has one of the most important responsibilities in our whole international society. He is one of the trustees of the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. Prabhupada personally arranged this BBT to safeguard and nourish his book publication and book distribution all over the world. And only those who are very, very trustworthy and utterly surrendered are given such a very sincere responsibility. Swabhas Prabhu is the temple president of what I believe to be the most successful temple in all of America. Srila Prabhupada's American headquarters, Los Angeles, California, which Prabhupada named New Dwarka. And since Swabhas Prabhu and Tadit Prabhu have been there as temple president of New Dwarka, it has flourished. The largest bhakta program of recruiting new devotees, the largest brahmachari ashram, the biggest book distribution, the most successful restaurant, the most successful gift shop, most prestigious people in the world, even people from Hollywood, not Bollywood, but Hollywood. They regularly shop there. And Tadit Mataji is their friend and giving them Krishna bhakti simply by her auspicious, merciful glance. Swavas Prabhu and Tadit Mataji have really sustained and maintained the purity of Prabhupada's philosophy and Prabhupada's culture in a very, very difficult city like Los Angeles. I remember back in the 70s when I lived in New Vrindavan, anybody from the East Coast who went to the West Coast would usually fall down because there's so much sense gratification. So the leader of New Vrindavan used to call L.A. Hell A. Just to somehow or other prevent people from going there because it's so dangerous. Prabhupada said the further west you go from Mayapur, the more sense gratification there is. And Los Angeles, California is about as west as you get. But yet Swavas Prabhu and Tadit Prabhu, they have been just faithful to their vows so many years as husband and wife, and just very, very loyally serving Srila Prabhupada in this environment, developing wonderful, wonderful center, Los Angeles, California, New Dwarka. And they're very, very kind upon me, always. I have been inviting them for many years to come to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. And I practically had to beg them to come. And out of pity and mercy, they finally accepted my invitation. Tadit Mataji, can you please stand up? Let us very enthusiastically offer very loud, heartfelt welcome to Swavas Prabhu and Tadit Mataji. If you wish for them to come back, please, much louder. I'd like to request Swavas Prabhu to speak whatever words he would like to offer to enlighten our hearts.
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Ummilitam Janitasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Mancha Kalpa Trubhyasya Kripasindavevata Paditanam Pabanebhyo Vaishnavevya Namun Maha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Siva Sri Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I'm almost embarrassed to say anything after that introduction. I feel like I should just go over there and sit down. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj is very merciful, as you all know, I'm sure. I can tell that all of you are very merciful also. Coming from, well, Hell Angeles, but also Lusol, Los Angeles, so Los Angeles, they used to call it. If you go to Los Angeles, you're considered to be loose. I'd have to say that this is, after a long time coming to Mumbai, I think over 20 years ago I came, and this is the first time in that period of time. One thing that is different, that's very enthusing, when I came here 20 plus years ago, I would only see American and Western devotees wherever you went in the temple. But I'm here today and I see so many Indian faces, devotees. So, thank you very much. The legacy goes on. And of course, that's the power of Srila Prabhupada and also the power of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. Ki jai! It's enlivening for myself, and I'm sure for any devotee that comes from the Western world, to come here and see so many wonderful faces. As Maharaj was saying, he said that Los Angeles was the... Well, I didn't say it, he said it. But one of the best temples in America. But in all of the world, I think that Chaupati Temple is the best. I came here to learn. I purposefully came here to learn. I wanted to see why it was the best temple in ISKCON. Most organized, so many surrendered devotees, wonderful deity worship, wonderful brahmachari ashram. I was told today 75 brahmacharis. That in itself is historical in ISKCON today. Just by the nature of how ISKCON is going, the brahmachari ashram is practically extinct. So to come to a temple that has 75 brahmacharis, I'm thinking, did I die and go to Vaikuntha? So, in this age especially, being in Bollywood, there's a lot of opportunity for sense gratification, practically anywhere in the world for that matter. But to become renounced and to take up this order and preach Krishna consciousness today, that's a miracle. Just like I feel that I'm a miracle, that I'm sitting here amongst all of you and these very elevated devotees, these great souls. I heard this when I was, you know, a new devotee, that one time someone asked Srila Prabhupada, if you're a sadhu, a great guru, teacher, then perform some miracle. Do something miraculous. You know, we think that a sadhu, guru, saintly person, you know, create a rasgulla or gold or, you know, give me a car. So I was told this by devotees that Srila Prabhupada, his answer to that was, he pointed to all his disciples, his white disciples, and he said, just see, this is my miracle. And it is. I'm a miracle. I'm a product of a miracle. No way did I ever think in my life that I would be a devotee growing up in my particular circumstance. Never did I think that 31 years later I would still be in Krishna consciousness. So that is the miracle. And as we heard some really wonderful philosophical discourses, and of course Shamsundar, some wonderful pastimes of Srila Prabhupada, I'd like to share one pastime with you that I had the opportunity with Srila Prabhupada. And it was in 1974 at the San Francisco Rath Yatra. I was a new devotee at that time. Somehow or other, the Denver Temple at that time was always known for having the Rocky Mountain Men. Denver is on the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. And we were always told that we were tough and rough. So every time we went to San Francisco, we had to work like rough and tough. So they put us to work. That year, by Krishna's mercy, Jayananda Prabhu, the godfather of Rath Yatra in America, he needed someone to be in charge of Lady Subhadra's cart. So just out of the blue, he looked at me and he pointed at me and said, "Okay, you're in charge of Lady Subhadra's cart." I didn't even know how to say Lady Subhadra. I had to ask him, "Who?" He told me about three or four times, "Lady Subhadra." And I said, "Oh, okay, okay." And I still didn't understand what he was saying. So anyway, we were in this parking lot and we had to put the carts together because they were dismantled. So every year we had to assemble the carts together. So we were there working day and night. And Jayananda introduced me to some wonderful, wonderful things in Krishna consciousness. One of them was we could drink 7-Up. And I thought, I am in heaven. This is 7-Up. Because, you know, when I was a new devotee, you either drank water or just nectar, but not 7-Up. So he introduced us to 7-Up. And I thought, Krishna consciousness is wonderful. So, as you may guess, we drank a lot of 7-Up. In fact, we had to run down to the corner, and it was a little store there, corner store, and we had to buy six-pack after six-pack after six-pack of 7-Up. So anyway, we put the carts together, and I had no idea what was in store, being in charge of Lady Subhadra's cart. I thought it was just something for a couple of hours. But 4 days later, and only maybe 2 or 3 hours of sleep a night, you know, painting, putting together, getting really dirty, and I thought, I didn't know what to think. But anyway, the days flew by. And so the night before Rath Yatra, we had to move the carts at midnight. You know, midnight for a devotee? I mean, really, you go to bed by 9 p.m., and that's like stretching it sometimes. But at midnight, we had to be out there. And I was delirious, dizzy from tiredness. I couldn't even hardly see properly. And we had to pull manually these carts into the park. And it was laborious work. And you know, devotees, you know, I mean, look at our arms. We have skinny little arms, skinny little legs. I mean, we're not like powerful physically. So for us, that was just such laborious work. And then maybe we got to sleep for about an hour or so. So then, of course, Srila Prabhupada came for the parade in the limousine. He got out of the limousine and so then I was put in charge to make sure that everything went okay for Srila Prabhupada. He had his servant with him, but I had to make sure the seating place was very nicely, you know, clean, the garland was there, water was there, everything was there. So it was very exciting. I totally lost track of time and space and who I was or who I thought I was. I forgot about everything. And just seeing Srila Prabhupada's glowing face, it literally, you felt like a small child that's with its parent. Sometimes a small child with its parent, if it sees somebody, you know, the child would stick its tongue out at him, out of arrogance, you know, or whatever, because they know that the father's there to protect. So we felt completely under the umbrella or protection of Srila Prabhupada. And we thought there was no care in the world. We didn't think about eating or sleeping or where we were or what the facilities were. We cared about nothing. All we cared about was just being next to Srila Prabhupada and seeing what we could do for him. considering that, you know, you're raised in America, you can become very arrogant and self-centered, and you think that the whole world moves around you. And it was amazing how in the presence of Srila Prabhupada, you forgot all that. That was miraculous that you didn't think about your own sense gratification. So Srila Prabhupada got on the cart, and the parade began, and the kirtan was really just going like crazy. And Guru Kripa Prabhu, he was leading the kirtan. It was totally ecstatic. So I was the person that was to, you know, slow the cart down, speed the cart up. I was supposed to be helping arrange that. At one particular point, the servant motioned to me. He was waving at me, and I didn't know what was happening. And he was waving, and then when I came up next to the cart, he said, "Stop the cart, stop the cart." And I thought, oh my God, what did I do wrong? You know, I was very nervous, and I thought, oh, what possibly could I have done wrong? And no one would say anything. So we saw Srila Prabhupada stand up, and very meticulously, he took off his sweater. He had a hat on. He took off his hat. He had a charter, took his charter off. He took off his sweater. And then very slowly, Srila Prabhupada was getting off the cart. The cart was stopped. Srila Prabhupada was getting off the cart. And then the next thing you know, Srila Prabhupada was going to the bushes. And following Srila Prabhupada was his servant with a loda and a bowl. The loda had water in it. And we all kind of stood there in amazement. We didn't quite know, well, what is happening here? What's going on? And, of course, Srila Prabhupada went to relieve himself in the bushes. And what was really amazing was that we were all waiting for him. And the kirtan was really going, going, and going. And then about 2 minutes later, Srila Prabhupada came out of the bushes. And at that time, the kirtan just broke out into a big, "Hari Bol!" And all the devotees just jumped up in ecstasy. With Srila Prabhupada coming out, and Prabhupada was like this. I'll never forget that, ever. It was so wonderful. Prabhupada could do anything, and it was wonderful. Whatever he did, it was, I wish I could use a better word, it was just absolutely perfect. It was wonderful. And then, of course, watching Srila Prabhupada even closer, the way Srila Prabhupada took his little finger and just scratched his nose. And we thought, wow. Just like a king. Just like a king. Only a king could do that. This was our Srila Prabhupada. And this is why we're here. We're a byproduct of that miracle. I cannot say truthfully that I really, and I'm sure my wife will excuse me, but I don't think I've ever really loved anyone so much. She nodded, okay. But I don't think I've ever loved anyone in my whole life like I've loved Srila Prabhupada. So, Jai Hari Bol. And in the Bhagavatam, there's that verse, Shushushro Sharadanasya, Vasudeva Kataruchi, Sian Mahatseva Vipra, Punya Tirtha Nusevana. It states in the Bhagavatam that if we serve such a person who's free from vice, bad habits, sinful habits. It says that one gains the affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudeva. So by some trick, I believe I had the opportunity to do a little bit of service for Srila Prabhupada. And I believe that from that, I developed one little fraction, a fraction of a desire to hear about the Supreme Lord. And from that, I believe that I've developed a little bit of a taste for understanding Shreyas and Prayas, short and long-term activity. We see in society today, everyone is thinking for immediate enjoyment. Something right now. Give it to me in whatever form. Give it to me as a pill. Whatever. Just give it to me so I can enjoy it and so-called be satisfied. And Srila Prabhupada taught us Shreyas, long-term. Don't think this short-term stuff. Think long-term. And that was unheard of in those days, because we thought in those days, give it to me right now. I need it at any cost. That is a miracle. Believe me, that is a miracle. And he told us how it's so important to have knowledge. He gives the example of a child. A child, here you have a beach here in Bombay, like in California we have a beach. You know, children, they go down to the beach with their parents and, you know, they begin to build sandcastles, these wonderful little creations. Those of you who have children, have you taken your child to the beach? Is it? And they're building little things, little houses, bucket things, you know, having so much fun. And the parent is very patient. The parent sits there, watches the child, and the child becomes completely immersed and enjoying like anything this creation that they're involved in. They're creating and they're just fully absorbed. They lose track of time. They don't care for eating or drinking. They just care about playing. But they lose track of time so much they don't know if it's getting late or dark or whatever. But the parent is watching over the child. It's looking, soon the sun will go down. Soon the high tide is going to come in. And the parent knows that soon when the high tide comes in, everything will be washed away. The sand castles will be washed. But the child is so immersed that no, they don't care. So, at a certain point, the parent says, okay, Sanjay, we have to go. And Sanjay said, no, I'm not going. No, but we must go. The ocean's coming. No, I won't go. But you must go. No, I won't go. And sometimes a child will be kicking and crying and screaming. And the child may even go so far as to say, I hate you. I hate you, Mama. I hate you. You're taking away my sense enjoyment. You don't love me. You don't care about me. You just care about yourself. And so that goes on. Is that correct? Yes, we've experienced that. So we see that by force sometimes, the parent has to take that child. And yes, the high tide comes in. And yes, the sand castles are gone. And the sun goes down. And this is the pure devotee of the Lord. The Acharya, the Guru. What does he say to us? Come on, let's go. What do we say? No. I'm not going. Ek minute. Not yet. Ek minute. I'll be right with you. And what do we do? Like children, what do? I just need to get that tata sumo. I need to get that one flat. Or I just need to make a few more crores. We're thinking like that. And sometimes the guru comes and says, no, you must come. and kicking and crying, oh, Gurudev doesn't understand. Gurudev, I don't know if Gurudev loves me anymore. So we see this is our condition. And when we meet a person of Srila Prabhupada's caliber, Srila Prabhupada, he's dragging me. I'm being dragged. I'm kicking and screaming, yelling and shouting. I don't want to go. I don't want to go. But Prabhupada's saying, no, you must go. So this is what's going on. We must go. And of course, as Shyamasundara Prabhu was pointing out very nicely, Srila Prabhupada knew how to do it so expertly. He was so sweet on how he approached this. He knew exactly how to entice us, the Western mind. He knew us. He knew how to treat us, how to be very tender with us and very loving. In my experience as a devotee, in the course of years, I've asked devotees how they perceived Srila Prabhupada. And it was amazing how many different types of Prabhupadas there were. I'm always amazed by how people saw Srila Prabhupada. I saw Srila Prabhupada as very strong, powerful, Kshatriya, very, very powerful man, the kind of person that I wanted to follow and fight for and give my life to. And then right next to me, a devotee would say, oh, Prabhupada was so gentle and kind and sweet. And I think to myself, is that the same Prabhupada that I know? This was Srila Prabhupada. This is a pure devotee of the Lord. He was able to do so many things that were absolutely incredible. And we loved him beyond our understanding. One time, Shruti Kirti Prabhu was in L.A. and he gave a very nice class. And he gave an example that was very, very sweet. He would massage Srila Prabhupada's body every day at a certain time. And he said during the massage, sometimes devotees would come in and they would tell Srila Prabhupada how much they're doing for you, for him, for Prabhupada. We're opening this temple, publishing this book, translating this, surrendering here. I'll give myself to you, Gurudev. And he said in the course of hearing this, he became a little bit jealous. Because then he thought to himself, all these devotees are so dedicated, but I'm just like a dog. I have nothing to offer Prabhupada. And so one day, he told Srila Prabhupada this. He said, Prabhupada, I'm so discouraged when I see all your disciples coming to you and telling you how much they love you and what they want to do for you and what they are doing for you. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm useless. I can't do anything for you. I don't even know if I love you. This is what he said to Prabhupada. And then he said that Srila Prabhupada was silent. He didn't say anything. Not a word. So then he just kept massaging. So one day went by. 2 days. 3 days. And then he said he forgot about it. After 3 days, it just slipped his mind. And he didn't think about it anymore. And then, as smart as Srila Prabhupada was, out of the blue, he would say to Srila Kirti Prabhu, you like massaging your spiritual master? And Srila Kirti Prabhu said, oh, yes, Srila Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada said, see, you do love your spiritual master. I thought that was such a wonderful example. That service,
that continuous, consistent service. This is what Srila Prabhupada considered to be love. As Maharaj pointed out, Vasudeva Kataruchi, Vasudeva Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojita, Janana Yasya Vairagyam Gyanam Chad Ahaitukam, that uninterrupted, we have to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission. And how does that happen? By love. It happens by love. Most of you, a lot of you here, you're married. What motivates you? What is your motivation? Everyone has a motivation in the world. Otherwise, what's the use of being in the world? We're motivated by something. Either it's Lakshmi or power, greed, anger. But there's also love. And that's what Srila Prabhupada wanted from us. And that's what Krishna wants from us, love. And that love, if that is our motivation, then so many things can be accomplished. And this is why I've stayed in ISKCON for so many years. Because the devotees are very loving. I'm a very unloving person. And in ISKCON, I've learned how to love by the association of devotees. Maharaj, Radhanath Maharaj has taught me how to love. So he taught me how to care. Niranjan Swami, Praladananda Maharaj, Shami Sundar. All these devotees, they love Srila Prabhupada. And I simply follow their example. And just like Shri Kirti Prabhu was saying, you love massaging your spiritual master? Oh yes, Srila Prabhupada. Then you love your spiritual master. So the thing that's been keeping me going is by seeing all these great souls doing their service to Srila Prabhupada. And in that way I can say, yes, Srila Prabhupada, I love you. So, thank you very much. Please continue with your service. I'm hoping in this short stay that I'm here that I'm going to learn a lot, and I feel that I'm learning something already. Because if you could stay here while I'm speaking, all of you are... You have a lot of love. Thank you very much.
Vishakha Prabhu, would you like to speak something? Just by her merciful glance, she is speaking volumes of Vedic literatures. Hari.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nirvasesa Sanyavadi Paskya Tadesha Tarane. Today the Maharajas were talking about the eight verses from the Shashastika by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Although Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers left volumes and volumes of literatures, Lord Chaitanya himself left only these eight verses, Shashastakam. So the third verse is very famous, that one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw on the street, more tolerant than the tree, ready to offer all respects to others, and expecting no respect for oneself. So this idea of humility is emphasized by Krishna Das Kaviraj when he writes about this verse. He says we should string this verse on the holy name of the Lord and wear it around our necks for constant remembrance. There is no other verse that he speaks of like this. 700 verses in Bhagavad Gita, 18,000 verses in Srimad Bhagavatam. But this one verse, he says, you string it on the thread of the holy name and wear it around your neck for constant remembrance. So, by chance, I found the root of this word humility. I happened to be reading some other book. And it mentioned this word humility is also the word humiliate comes from that word. the word human has the same derivative. Also the word humane, very kind, also comes. And the root of the word is Greek, and it means earth. Another word that comes from this word is humus. You may not be familiar with humus, but those of us who garden, humus is very important. When vegetable matter decomposes, it becomes this rich black earth, which can retain water very well and is also full of nutrients. So if you plant a seed in this humus, the seed will grow very strong and very quickly. It will be vigorous. Similarly, if we put the Bhakti Lata Bij, the seed of devotion, if we plant that in a humble attitude, then it will grow very strong. Rupa Goswami describes this Bhakti Lata Bij, when it's watered properly, the water is essential. And in his analogy, the water is hearing and chanting. So when we water it, it grows and it pierces the material coverings of this universe. And it goes through the Brahma Jyoti, even it grows through Vaikuntha, and it wraps itself around the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. And there it bears fruit, and that fruit is Krishna Prema. So the root of all this, the foundation, is humus or humility. One who is humble is very low to the ground, so they can receive this watering. If we're proud, if we're standing up too high, then when the watering can comes around, it will miss us. We will not be graced in that way. So coming here to this temple, this temple is the manifestation of a humble attitude. And those of us who are honored to come here, as Suvas Prabhu was saying, we have so much to learn. So perhaps the first and foremost thing we have to learn is humble service to the Vaishnavas. Because with that humble service, our Bhakti Lata Bij will know no obstacles. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Today we have been showered with the nectar of the realizations of these most wonderful devotees. Their deep appreciation and comprehension of Gaudiya philosophy and their love for Srila Prabhupada, who convinced us by his compassion. Srila Prabhupada taught us that the way of perfection, Mahajano Yena Gata Sapanta, is to follow in the footsteps of the great souls. Yesterday was the disappearance day of one of the great acharyas of Vaishnavism, Sripad Ramanuja Acharya. I would like to speak one small incident within his life that very much illustrates the spirit of a Vaishnava's heart, which Srila Prabhupada carried so magnificently in his life. Ramanujacharya accepted Yamunacharya as his spiritual master. But before any formal initiations, Yamunacharya left this world. And he actually deputed Ramanujacharya to carry on his mission. One of the dear disciples of Yamunacharya, Mahapurna, was the person that Ramanujacharya accepted as his spiritual master. In his godbrother, he accepted a guru. And he saw his guru in his godbrother. He learned the scriptures for him. Although he was so deeply learned himself, there was really nothing for Ramanujacharya to learn. But still, in his natural humility, he felt that he knew nothing. He wanted to hear from the great souls who have given their lives to the Lord, because actual realization is not just the theoretical study or memorization, but realization comes through submitting oneself to great personalities and hearing from them. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. Upadekshantite jnanam jnaninastatvatarshana. To actually realize the truth, we must humble ourselves and eagerly hear from great souls. One day, Mahapurna gave an instruction to Ramanujacharya. He said, nearby is a very affluent town, Tirukottiyur. And in that town is a Vaishnava. There is no other Vaishnava as pure in heart, as advanced and as learned as him. In this whole area, his name is Goshtipurna. You go to him. Because of his realization and knowledge, he can give you the holy Vaishnav mantra and explain it to you in such a way that you will gain tremendous spiritual benefits. Go, submit yourself at his feet and beg him to give you the mantra. A few days later, Ramanujacharya went to that town, Tirukottiyur. And he approached Goshtipurna with great humility, submitted himself and said, will you please bestow your mercy upon me and initiate me into the Vaishnav mantra? He said, let me think about it. Come back some other time. Ramanujacharya was a little depressed. So he went back to Sri Rangam. Meanwhile, a few days later, there was a big festival at Sri Rangam where the deities were brought on procession. So Goshtipurna went to Sri Rangam for that festival. And in the midst of the festival, the deity of Ranganath inspired the head pujari to speak. The head pujari said, Goshtipurna, you should give the mantra to Ramanuja. There should be no reason to hesitate. And Goshtipurna spoke to the deity through the pujari. He said, but this mantra is very sacred. This mantra is none different than you. And only a person who is completely pure in heart, who has no material ego or desire, is worthy of receiving this mantra. How can I give it to anyone else? And the deity spoke back through the pujari and said, you do not understand. This Ramanuja is so pure that he could deliver the entire humanity. So Ramanujacharya came back, requested the mantra. Guru said, I've never given this mantra to anyone. It's too sacred of a mantra. He wouldn't give it to him. Ramanujacharya went back to Sri Rangam, then came back begging for the mantra. He was rejected. He went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and back and forth 18 times
and was rejected every time. So Ramanujacharya was thinking in his heart, I am so sinful. I am such a low-born, such a egoistic, such a contaminated person. I am not worthy of this mantra. What is the use of my birth? And he began to cry and cry incessantly out of humility. Not out of frustration, but out of humility. He was weeping. When this news came to Gostipurna, his heart softened. The 19th time Ramanujacharya returned and asked for the mantra, Gostipurna said, there is no one else that I have met that is like you. I have not given this mantra to anyone else. Because only a person who is pure in his devotion, who is humble in heart, is fit to receive it. This mantra is none different than Lord Narayan. And anyone who receives this mantra and chants it regularly will go back home, back to Godhead, to Vaikuntha, to live in the association of Lord Narayan eternally. That is the power of this mantra. Today I will give you the mantra. But I also order you, never, ever, ever tell anyone the mantra. No ears of anyone with any material desire should ever hear it. And with that order, he initiated Ramanujacharya. When Ramanujacharya got the mantra, his heart was over flooding with transcendental gratitude and happiness. He was experiencing such an upsurge of grace through chanting the holy name. He offered his obeisances to his Guru Maharaj and then began his trip back to Sri Rangam. On the way, in that same town, he happened to see so many people walking. His heart was flooding over with compassion. These people are wasting their human births, trying to enjoy the temporary pleasures of this world. And therefore, dukkalayam ashashvatam, they're going to have to suffer. I cannot tolerate to think of their suffering. This mantra has the power to send them all back to Godhead. Flooding with compassion, he began to call out with a loud voice, everyone, everyone, I have a priceless jewel that I'm going to give each and every one of you. Come to the temple immediately and receive your jewel. All the people started running to the temple. Soon the news spread that there was a prophet who could fulfill everyone's desire and who was going to give out jewels to everyone. Ramanujacharya was with two of his own disciples, Dasarathi and Kuresh. In great bliss, he embraced them. Then he climbed to the tower of the temple. By that time, thousands and thousands and thousands of people were assembled, eagerly waiting to receive jewels. Ramanujacharya called out with a loud voice. He said, all of you, you are more dear to me than my very life. I cannot tolerate to see your suffering. I will give my life, my soul, my everything to deliver you from all sufferings forever. I have a jewel in the form of a mantra that if you chant it sincerely, you will be free from all material anxieties and you will attain eternal shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Narayan. Now please, everyone, repeat this mantra after me. Then Ramanujacharya, with a voice echoing like thunder, loudly cried out this 8-syllable mantra, and everyone with a thunderous roar repeated after him, Om Namo Narayanaya.
Om Namo Narayanaya.
Om Namo Narayanaya. After chanting this mantra, everybody felt liberated. There was complete silence. Everyone was looking at one another and smiling. Usually people don't do that anymore. They were looking at each other, smiling. They loved each other. They felt an upsurge of love for God, a desire to serve. They felt as if they entered Vaikuntha. Everyone came, thousands of people, to prostrate themselves in a spirit of surrender at the lotus feet of Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya, with great humility, decided to go to worship his beloved Guru Maharaj, Gostipurna. By the time Ramanujacharya arrived at his Gurudev's ashram, Gostipurna had already heard this uproarious sound vibration of the secret mantra. Oh, the news was very well understood. So Ramanuja, with great humility, came and fell at his Gurudev's feet. And Sripad Gostipurna was so angry. He said, "Get out of my sight! I do not want to ever, ever, ever see your sinful, disobedient face. Get out from here. You unloyal, disobedient, so-called disciple. I ordered you not to give that mantra to anyone, and you gave it to everyone. Now, because I'm seeing your face, I am accruing all kinds of horrible sins. Get out from here. Because of this offense, you will have to suffer countless births in hell." Then he remained silent. Ramanujacharya was feeling so much peace in his heart hearing his guru's words. And he spoke. He spoke with such humility. He said, "Dear Gurudev, I knew that I would go to hell for disobeying your instructions. I was ready and willing to go to hell for countless births due to my offense. But you told me that anyone who chants this mantra will attain Vaikuntha and the loving service of Lord Narayan. And I know that your words are true. So when I saw all of these people, countless people within this material world, suffering and struggling for the futile efforts of material enjoyment, I couldn't bear it. And I concluded, if one insignificant, lowly person like me goes to hell, so that thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people could go back to Vaikuntha. That's a wonderful exchange. Let me go to hell, but let them enjoy with Lord Narayan. Please, Gurudev, please forgive me for my offense. When Gostipurna heard those words, his angry face and eyes that were red like hot coals suddenly transformed into eyes filled with loving tears and a peaceful smile on his face. He embraced Ramanujacharya and wept tears upon his body. Everyone who was present who saw this was struck with wonder. Gostipurna then spoke. He said, Ramanujacharya, there is no one in the entire world like you. Your compassion to suffering souls is the true glory of a Vaishnava. You are the dear most loving servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And today I accept that you are my guru and I am your disciple. You have understood the essence of the heart of the Lord, compassion to all suffering souls. Whatever you did is the highest, most magnanimous act of loving service to the Lord. Please forgive me for my offense. Ramanujacharya, with tears of humility from his eyes, fell on his knees and worshipped the feet of Gostipurna. He said, I have no qualification. I am nothing. But because I received that mantra from your holy lips, the power of that mantra brought me the faith by which I knew that the sound vibration would clean everyone's hearts. In this way, Ramanujacharya pleased his Gurudev more than anyone else by disobeying his instruction. Being willing to go to hell for the welfare of others, he understood the essence of the heart of his Guru and the Supreme Lord. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took two elements from all of the four great Vaishnavacharyas. One of the things that he inculcated in his teachings that he brought from Ramanujacharya is service to the Vaishnavas. And how important and sacred that principle is in Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Gopi Bharatur Padakamala Yora Das 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 Anu Das. It was the Lord's utmost aspiration to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. And it is that quality in others that attracts His mercy. We remember the story of Maharaj Pratap Rudra. He was the king of Orissa. Very opulent, powerful personality. The Lord would not see him because he was in a materialistic position. But when he took off all his royal garments and put on the robes of a simple Vaishnava beggar, and went into that garden and with the blessings of the Vaishnavas, he massaged the Lord's feet and sang the beautiful song of the gopis to Lord Chaitanya. The Lord embraced him again and again and said, "Who are you?" King Prataparudra revealed his heart. He said, "I am the insignificant servant of the servant of your servant, and the only aspiration in my life is to eternally have the place of being the servant of the servant of your servants." Srila Prabhupada was given the order on a rooftop in Calcutta on Otudonga Junction Road in about 1922. Yes? By his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that you are a young man, take this message of Lord Chaitanya and teach it in the English language to the people of the Western world. And then you will benefit and all others will benefit. And what is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya? Srila Niranjan Swami Maharaj has so beautifully, eloquently and eruditely described the first verse of Chikshastrakam. Chetodarapanamarajanam. Lord Chaitanya is Yugavatar, teaching Yuga Dharma. And through this process, the way back home to Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world, through the chanting of the holy names. Lord Chaitanya told his devotees, Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. That it's only the chanting of the holy names that can deliver us in this age of Kali. Ramanujacharya had faith in the holy name. And he was willing to go to hell on the basis of that faith. Srila Prabhupada, he received the message from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. No secrets. Give out the holy name to everyone and anyone. That was the Lord's instruction to Nityananda Prabhu, and that is our parampara. Shamsundar Prabhu explained the six kinds of attitudes. Srila Prabhupada as Acharya, even if there wasn't a single tiny little spark of inclination in someone's heart, Prabhupada still saw something there. Prabhupada saw that little tiny spark that nobody else could possibly see. It is a fact. Other great Vaishnavas, they went to the West and they said, it's impossible. You can't preach to these people. They're barbarians. They're malechas. They're yavanas. They're addicted to eating meat. They're having all kinds of girlfriends and boyfriends and drinking alcohol and taking drugs and having all kinds of horrible foods that they eat. How could you preach to them? No, they're low class. Impossible. But Prabhupada saw that little spark. And he was willing to give his life, his soul, his health, his everything to just fan that spark. Shamsundar Prabhu at their Pune Yatra has so beautifully described how Prabhupada fanned that spark that nobody else could even see. It was covered by layers and layers of smog and dust and smoke and every other kind of material contamination. These hearts were literally ecological disaster areas. But yet Prabhupada saw what nobody else could see. The capacity. capacity for this person addicted to all kinds of sins to love God unconditionally. And Prabhupada had such complete faith in the holy name to awaken that spark, to fan that spark into a fire that would burn to ashes all anartas, or unwanted egoistic attachments. Yes, Srila Prabhupada traveled around the world over 12 times. In that compassionate mood of Lord Nityananda and Haridas, in that spirit of Sripad Ramanujacharya, inviting everyone, be free from all your useless materialistic engrossment, which will simply cause suffering and death. Be liberated to the highest platform of Goloka Vrindavan. Find the eternal loving shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath by sincerely, with a humble heart, serving the Vaishnavas, showing compassion to the conditioned souls, and loudly chanting the holy names. Since we are aspiring for Krishna Loka, which is higher than the Vaikuntha of Narayan, we should chant even more loudly. Louder, please. Thank you very much. When these wonderful devotees, when they speak of Prabhupada's mercy, it is not just something that they have read in a book. When they speak of Prabhupada's mercy, some of them were Prabhupada's most intimate, immediate associates year after year. Some were just serving his mission from a distance. Physical distance. But actually anyone who associates with those who love Prabhupada is intimately associating with Prabhupada. Anyone who carries the order of Prabhupada to chant the holy names, to live in the spirit that Prahlada Ananda Maharaj and Bishakha Prabhu were speaking, to Deep Mataji, to live in the spirit that she lives, all of these devotees living. When we try to follow in the footsteps of these devotees, when we read Prabhupada's transcendental literatures, when we try to serve according to Prabhupada's directions, yes, Prabhupada is intimately manifesting himself in our hearts personally. Why? Because he's Krishna's very dear, empowered representative in our lives. And Prabhupada is always eager to bring us to Sri Radharani and Sri Gopinath's lotus feet, to to engage us in their eternal loving service. So it is a great fortune to hear from devotees who have realization. However erudite or simple they may be, because those realizations penetrate into the inner core of our heart and awaken our devotional propensities. Let us very, very gratefully offer our thankfulness to Srila Prabhupada's dear disciples.